Greg and Scott on Radioslot.com. Welcome to the show. We are coast to coast, nationwide, around the world. Thank you for listening wherever you are. Okay, now we were off last week because Daddy needed a day off.
What happened to we're coast to coast, nationwide, all that stuff?
I just said it.
No.
I said coast to coast, nationwide, around the world. Thank you for listening wherever you are. And then I segued into we were
and
off
if
last
you're
week.
Not.
We haven't gotten to that part yet.
Oh. I'm sorry. When we change the lineup, it just throws me off.
I'm sorry. I should have done all that first. But no, I wanted to mention the fact that we were off last week and just get it out of the way. But yeah, I needed a day off. So
yeah.
We talk about anything and everything on this show. And if you're not offended in the first 5 minutes, we'll try harder.
Or you're not listening.
I'm Brian Drake. He's Scott. Across the table, we got Ziggy. How's it going, Ziggy?
Going well, buddy. How about you?
Very well. Very well. And we are changing the format today.
Welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and we might mention we're coach-free today.
Yeah.
He's MIA.
Not a scheduled absence, but yeah.
That's cool. We got a sub.
He was crying. why
was he?
Tyson lost. And he couldn't handle it.
Well, did Tyson really lose, though?
There's 20 million reasons that he did not lose.
Yeah, and of course, we got the great Mike Tyson rear-end extravaganza. So, I mean, come on. Did anybody really lose?
Yikes.
So, yeah, we're changing the format today. We have this is our first interview. We are interviewing filmmaker and author Ricky Borba. He is joining us from, I've been telling everybody, Tennessee, Ricky. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am 20 minutes east of Nashville in a little city called Lebanon.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you are not just a filmmaker, you are an author. Your book is called Trusting God, all about pursuing the dreams you think or you believe that God has put on your heart. Is that an accurate way of describing it?
Yeah, that sums it up pretty succinctly, my friend.
Very well, very good.
So is it more of a self-autobiography, or is it like a more of a help book that other people can use?
I would like to say it's more of a help book, but I did draw from my own personal experience, but it took me 9 years to write it. So it was more like literally the first page says, I'm writing this in a house that I'm late on rent for, with two cars that are 30 years old. I have like $28 in my bank account, but I know God's called me to be a filmmaker. Let's see what happens. And then over 11 years, I wrote the book. So a little bit of my journey, but really more about like, if God's called you to do something, if you believe that with all your heart, then go after it and see what happens.
So nice. Plenty of contextual research, I would say, yes. Over 11 years.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and then we got some films by you, right? My Brother's Crossing.
Yeah, that one was number 8 at the U.S. box office. Believe it or not, that's my little feather in my cap. The asterisk, and I don't mind saying this at all, the asterisk to that is that they released it during COVID. So when you know there were no movies out, it came out. I think there was only like 7 movies that came out that year, and we were one of them. So I get to tell people I have a top 10 box office film. I don't have to tell them how much it made. I just get to say I have a top 10 box office film and leave it at that.
No, that's all you need. So
that's a good way to do it. I'm still a little confused though, because it was only 2 weeks to slow the spread. So what's the problem?
Right. And if masks work, then why the vaccine? And if vaccines, then we'll just keep going.
All right. I'm sold. I like you already.
So My Brother's Crossing, which I have to apologize. I've been telling the guys it was My Brother's Keeper. Somehow I got that
mixed
up.
Common mistake.
Yeah, and then Hope for the Holidays, Christmas at Keystone. You've got a couple of TV series here. 3 episodes in Diary of an Assassin, and then Forgotten Son. I haven't heard you talk about those.
Well, Forgotten Son was going to be turned into a film, and then because of the industry I'm in, people's feelings get hurt, and there's no coming back from it sometimes with people who just, you know, I'll just be blunt, who don't know the Lord. There's people who just like to be perpetually offended. And so with that one, we started trying to get that ball rolling and that train on the track. And the initial writer was not thrilled with some of the changes we made. And we just kind of threw our hands up and said, you know what, at this point, it's easier if we just kind of part ways. So that it's a process to take things off IMDb, and sometimes they don't allow you. So I've tried taking that one off a couple times. So my first film was Hope for the Holidays. That's the film I hang my hat on. I think it's my best film. I worked on that for almost 2 years. very long story short, not that you asked, was that film is about a mother who gets cancer. She's in her 60s. Her son in his 40s freaks out, robs a bank to pay for her medical bills, gets caught, and goes to prison. I got that script, and then a couple months later, my own mother was diagnosed with cancer. And so she went from diagnosis to death in 6 weeks. And I asked the writers and the producer if I can rewrite major portions of that film, especially the dialogue between the main character Danny and his mother Georgia, to reflect what my own mother and I were going through. And they said yes. And so God, you know, the Bible says, what the devil intended for harm, God will use for good. And I was able to take what was going on in my real life and make that film a much better film. I love that film with all my heart. And then my second film, My Brother's Crossing, that was the box office one that we don't have enough time to talk about what I don't like about that film.
Oh,
And then, yeah. And then Christmas at Keystone, moved to Tennessee, immediately did a film with Kevin Sorbo and Corbin Burnson. That was a lot of fun. And then the sequel to that one comes out in 2025 called Wedding at Keystone, which has James Arnold Taylor, Victoria Jackson, and a few other notable names and faces that you'll enjoy. So yeah, four films under my belt, and that's where I'm at now. And a book that came out last year. So
Right on. Now,
nice.
I did notice Wedding at Keystone. You on your IMDb page, you have five upcoming projects. That's one of them.
Yes.
And then, so you got
Sunday
that,
Sunday is one of them.
yeah. And that's pre, yeah. It says pre-production. Anything
Yeah.
you want to talk about here with?
Oh man, so yeah, let's talk about Sunday Sunday for a second. I was on a bicycle. When I say bike ride, people think I'm like on a motorcycle. I'm not. I was on a bicycle ride during the pandemic. I was putting my bike in the garage, and this thought came into my mind for the first time ever. What if a fat white pastor switched bodies with a very in shape African American street hustler? And I was like, oh my
Oh,
gosh. So
okay. You told me about this one.
yeah, so that script has been in development for 3 years. I would like to say that 2 months ago, the final version of it is done. Like, we don't have anything more to tweak. We're right now seeking funding. We've got our first funds, so that'll help us land our actors. But I want a fat white funny guy and a very in shape black guy to play opposite each other, and it's a body switcheroo movie. So,
All right.
We know plenty of fat white guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you, yeah. Do you know?
Even a couple of fat white pastors too.
Yeah, I know one that's a pastor. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
Of course, I could probably qualify as well, except I'm not the
I
pastor.
thought, I mean, I thought that's what they were alluding to. I didn't want to
Yeah.
say, but.
So no, you mentioned getting the funding, and that's one thing I wanted to talk about. I mean, not just your movies, but the process of putting a production together. So you've written the script,
Yeah.
and so now you've got to hustle to get the money, or
That
how does that
sucks.
work?
It sucks. Like, at this level of filmmaking, and I'm so thankful to God that I'm here. Don't get me wrong. Like, eternally grateful that I'm a filmmaker. But at this level where you're not Christopher Nolan or Steven Spielberg or anybody who's noted in Hollywood, it's write your script and then go get your funding. And, you know, on these films that I've made that are about $1 million budgets, they're hard to promote. They're hard to, you know, get out there and get the Amazons and Netflixes of the world to respect them. And so you make them, and you know, they hopefully make their money back and some people see them. But with Sunday Sunday, that's a $5 million budget. So you'd ideally want to get a $5 million budget and a $5 million marketing budget so that they're equal. That's what they say in Hollywood. If your
Oh.
film's 50 million, you want a 50 million marketing budget. But yeah, at this level where you're quote unquote an indie filmmaker, it's, hey Brian, I wrote this really incredible script. Can you please read it and let me know if you want to put in 50 grand? Because that'd be awesome, buddy. That's kind of how it goes. So we've got first funds from a new streaming platform, and like I said, that'll help us get our actors. Then once you get your actors, I can go back to you, Brian, and say, hey Brian, you know, Jamie Foxx and Kevin James are involved and attached now. What do you think? And you're like, ah, okay, now I'll kick in. So that's kind of the process at this level.
And you make it sound simple, but it's probably not, right? I mean, how many
It's
phone
not.
calls?
There are pitch packets
Yeah.
and there are pitch decks and there are one sheets and there are meetings and there are ROI and comparables. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. I do a lot of similar things in the book business, actually. So I do know some of
Okay.
that, especially the return on investment. It's like, okay, I've
Yeah.
written this book, it's just like these other books, and et
Yeah.
cetera. So, what is Club Monologue?
Club
That's
Monologues,
another on your upcoming
during
list.
the pandemic, I taught an acting class on Zoom to like 18 or so people. And when things started opening back up again, they're like, wouldn't it be awesome if we could all get together and do like a short film? And I'm like, well, if you guys want to come to Tennessee, that's fine. I'll shoot it and edit it and, you know, all that stuff. And they're like, okay. So literally all of them got together and put plane tickets and hotels, and they came here for 3 days and we shot a little short film so all of us could finally meet each other, because we spent a good year doing Zoom acting classes during the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
No, that's just a good story right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Well, let's go back to your book, Trusting God, Pursuing Your Dreams, and Never, Ever Giving Up on Yourself. It's available on Amazon, paperback, and ebook. How did you know that God wanted you to do anything with movie making? Because I went through a similar process where it's like, you know, what does God want me to do with my life? You know, I mean, I think everybody, when you're younger, you go through this. And I eventually came to the conclusion that God doesn't necessarily care about my vocation as long as it's not illegal or some sort of moral compromise.
Yeah. My favorite kids book is called I Love God, But Everything I Want to Do with My Life is Illegal. That's just I knew from a very early age that the one thing I enjoyed above all else was entertaining and making people laugh. And I remember being at family parties. My grandparents had a pool and we would play music really loud during the summer. And I would get up and do these little, like, I'm a huge rap fan. So I would mimic Rob Bass and DJ Z Rock and MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice. And I remember just doing that. My family was fixated on me. I'm like, I like this feeling. And I pursued acting and did acting and was in a movie and hosted a TV show on the WB network and just really, really loved it. And I'm like, you know what? I think I would get more joy out of having more control of the story. What does directing look like? And then, I'm bragging of my gifts in the Lord, not about me, but God has made me the type of leader that ingratiates themselves to people. And I really love people and being around people. Really, when people ask me about directing, what's the secret to directing? How are you a good director? It's really just managing people and personalities. Mm. I mean, yes, you have somebody help you stay on schedule and on budget and stuff, but really it's, you know, the actor coming to you and saying, well, I woke up this morning and I have a pimple, I feel fat. And you're like, okay, well, we can shoot around that, this and that. It's just managing personalities. So I just loved film. I loved acting. I loved entertaining. And I just felt like there was nothing else on earth for me to do. And then the one caveat to that would be when I went to Bible college in 2008, I felt like God said, I want you to be a pastor. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'll have one of those churches that has a really kick-ass. Can I say kick-ass on here?
Sure. Right? Why not?
Yeah, but you have to say
really,
it
I'll just
three
say awesome.
Times
it has a really awesome video ministry. And I'll be that pastor. That's a really awesome video ministry and whatever. And I went to Africa while I was a 31-year-old college student with two kids and one on the way at the time. And while I was in Africa, in Tanzania, the people in Kigoma were watching American media on their flip phones. I was there for 27 days, and these people that were wearing the same shirts and no shoes and all this stuff were watching Eminem and Jay-Z and all these other music videos on their flip phones. And I remember asking my interpreter, I'm like, I don't understand. I'm like, these people are barely feeding themselves and clothing themselves. How are they watching American media? She's like, whatever money they get at the beginning of the year or whatever it happens, they will prepay their cell service so they can have their cell phone working for the month. And that is their number one thing on the totem pole. And I just felt in that moment, God's like, these devices, these phones are going to allow my word to spread the kingdom throughout the globe. And I want you to be a part of that. And I was in Africa and I remember very vividly thinking, pastoring means loving people and caring for people, but God has called me to be a filmmaker. I don't care how hard it's going to be from this point on. I'm going to make films. And then very long story short, I went back to college, got my degree, worked for a film production company, had a prophetic dream. And that prophetic dream really was the only reason why I stuck by this at certain points, because there was always more month than money and always more heartbreak and hardships than the highs. And that dream really was the only thing that carried me through.
Wow. Well, we're up on a break here, but you mentioned actors with pimples who feel fat. How many times did Kevin Sorbo come to you and say that?
Oh, you know what? So here's the thing about it. Kevin had a bad knock at the time for being a jerk, and I told him that, and he said, you know, I'm really working on becoming a different person. He goes, I don't want to be known for that. I don't want my legacy being known for being a hard guy to work with. And that guy, 10 out of 10 in terms of want to work with again, treating the cast, treating the crew, hands down an awesome guy, but yes, he does have that rep.
Right on. I actually didn't know that. I was just making a joke. Okay. I loved the Hercules show. I used to watch it on the TV. Yeah, so no, whenever I see his name, it's always a fond memory of Hercules and watching those shows on whatever weeknight they were on.
Hercules. Yeah.
Well, you and Scott have a lot in common. He's a rap fan too.
there you go.
So
no, I love it that you learned that it takes two to make a thing go right, and then
that's the song.
And you found a way to let them put you in the mix.
That's it. Absolutely. Like both MC Hammer and Rob Bass references there, Brian.
I had to marry them both, and I have to constantly educate Brian on all the.
You are too legit to quit, my friend.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. Thank all you. Right, we will be back right after this. Drake and Scott with Ziggy and Minus Coach today on Radioslot.com, back with our second segment, and we are doing something different today. We are interviewing filmmaker and author Ricky Borba. His book, Trusting God, Pursuing Your Dreams, and Never Ever Giving Up on Yourself. Find it on Amazon, paperback, and Kindle. So we're telling his story and talking about his movies. And we just found out
we're kind of talking about how you have to pray just to make it today.
Yeah.
Oh, you do. You do.
That's another MC Hammer reference, Brian, just so you know.
See, I thought it was something insightful, something, you know, and, no, it's just, and you're just making rap references.
It's me and my new buddy punning that's back
right.
and forth.
We're going to go back and turn this mother out. That's all we're going
to
do.
There we go. Exactly. Well, I've never talked to a pastor of film before, and I'm starting to feel like I just can't touch this. I have no idea what your experience is like, and that's why it's so interesting.
See, now I feel like Captain America. It's like, okay, I get that. I understand that reference. Yeah.
No, it's all good.
That's good, too.
Yeah. No, we're going to pump it up, the whole show. Pump it up.
Well done. Well done. Ring him, Brian.
All right. Yeah. So just let's go back to actors, since we talked about Kevin Sorbo before the break. Have you been able to discover any actors that, you know, that were previously unknown that impressed you at all?
I have the last two movies I've done. They were in the first movie, they were the supporting, and then this movie they became the leads because they were so incredible. One was from my acting class, one I met at a film festival, and they're incredible. I can't take credit and say that I found them or that I'm helping their careers, but when you see talent, how should I phrase this, talent like that is recognizable. Like, there's some people you're like, okay, don't quit your day job, I get it, you want to be in a movie and have a couple lines. Other people are like, oh, you were born for this. And when you find those people and you get along with them and they do incredibly well on your films, you want to bring them to your next projects. Much like Scorsese likes to work with Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, when you find the people that really make your film sing, you want to keep going with them.
And isn't Samuel Jackson like every movie he's ever done?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You just throw him in your film and you're automatically funded.
Yeah, that's true.
So you used to live in California, and I suppose we should go full disclosure here. You and I met in college in an acting class, and then we worked at a radio station together. So
yes.
we go back a ways, and then...
Pre-production, that was one of my questions.
I know your real last name. That's how far back we go.
That's right. Yeah, it's not... And my real name is not a secret. It's on the copyright page of all my books. So no, we don't hide that.
Yeah, it's Brian Drake.
Yeah.
I knew you when you were a dancing machine.
Oh, we're gonna tell that story now.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, the only dance I know now is the Trump dance. So yeah.
Well, that brings joy and pain.
Oh, there it is.
That's a DJ Easy Rock reference, just so you know, Brian.
Okay.
I got
pump it. Pump it up.
So what made you go out to Tennessee? Because all the movie action, allegedly, is here in California.
No, that is not true anymore at all. Yes, you're still going to have Hollywood, but everybody who wants to make projects that, A, make a difference, but B, aren't bogged down by I'm not even going to say it. Just go look up what the criteria is to be nominated for Best Picture now. Everybody who doesn't want to have to adhere to that has moved here. But, you know, you want to talk about what specifically brought me here. During the pandemic, I am walking my oldest daughter to soccer practice, and I heard God say Tennessee in 4. I was like, okay, in 4 years, my oldest two will be out of high school. My middle one will be starting high school. My littles will be in junior high. That sounds great. The very next day, his lordship Gavin Newsom tweeted, if you have children in public school, they need to get the vaccination. And my wife's a chiropractor, and I'm a firm believer of the government not having our best interests in mind at all times when it came to all those things. And I said, no, we're not doing that. So I said, God, if you met Tennessee in 4 months, I need three specific things to happen. I threw my fleece out, and these were major things. These were like major things. And within a week, all three of them happened. And I was like, all right. And then we went from September 22nd. We were living in Tennessee January 9th.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, speaking of Newsom, he is a
nuisance.
Yeah. We talk about him a lot on this show. And this morning, while I was eating my breakfast, I was looking at stuff we might talk about. And he just bought a $9.1 million mansion in Marin County. And great. This was so his oldest kid could go to some $60,000 a year high school.
What, remind me again what his salary is, and then add that up for 20 years. Tell me if that's close to 9.1 million.
It's not. It's it's nowhere close. Yeah. No, but it's just more of the elite snobs being elite snobs, and that's one of the reasons that they lost a couple weeks ago.
No, he's betting on futures because he gets to run in 4 years.
Yeah. Right.
That's what's going on.
That I know. Yeah, and right. We'll and that's going to be a comedy skit all by itself is watching him because he thinks it's just a sure thing. And,
I don't think Ricky will be making a movie about it.
Oh, he'll make a movie about some.
I'd rather
the devil went down to Fornia.
and by the way, Ricky, I noticed on your upcoming movies, there's no 00 doggy. What's up with that?
I don't know where to take that right now. I don't know what to say.
I have to explain the joke. You know, that was a suggestion I made.
Yeah.
That he could make.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Okay.
Oh, see, and you forgot it, and you already forgot it. Yeah, but a dog who's got a collar with some secret information on it, and there's a CIA agent that's supposed to get the dog from one point to another, and there's all these shenanigans as everybody's chasing after the dog, and it's going to be a great kids movie. You don't kill the dog at the end. The dog's got to live.
Right.
And it's going to be great. And
I'm waiting for you to fund it, Brian. That's where
we're at. Oh, is that where we're at? Okay. Well, I guess I have to write another book then.
Yeah. You just need 50 mil.
Yeah. That's it. That's
right. And Samuel Jackson. There you
that's
go.
Right.
I mean, let's get it started. Ricky, they don't understand that was a
no,
reference.
No, I understand that one. I get,
oh, you do?
I get that one. Yeah. That was. Black Eyed Peas, right?
No. What have we been referencing the whole show so far?
Well, rap stuff, but no, there was
two specific artists. He led with DJ Easy Rock, Rob Bass, and DJ Easy Rock.
No, let's get it started. No, let's get
and MC Hammer.
No, but let's get it started. It was the band that had Fergie in it.
Well, Black Eyed Peas did it like decades later.
But
the original gangster.
They did Let's Get Retarded. That was the initial. Remember, that was the initial name of that song.
Yes.
Yeah, but they had to change it because
they did.
They offended too many people.
I see.
That's true.
Okay. So now, why did you decide to put your story into a book?
I just really want to encourage people that have a dream in their heart to continue making that happen. Because I say this with all humility. I am no one. I mean, I was from Fremont, California. Didn't know anybody in Hollywood or anywhere else for that matter in terms of the film industry. And God put a desire in my heart to make films. And now I've made some films with some people that people recognize. And it's all because I trusted God enough to say, all right, if you're putting this thought in my mind, then it's up to you to get me there, not me. And so I just, you know, try to be obedient as I can. So my story should speak to people and say, this guy came from nowhere in terms of that career that he wanted. He didn't know anybody and God made it happen. What could God do with my dreams? And so that's the whole point.
Have you been pleased with sales so far?
Yeah, I have actually. It sold out on Amazon its very first week, which made me very happy. I actually put my phone number in the very middle of the book, and I said, this isn't fluff. If you want to call me or text me and have me encourage you, or if I can help you out in any way, I want to do that. And I've had quite a few people text and call me and say, hey, I'm in the middle of your book. I got to this page. Some wanted prayer. Some wanted actual help with what they're working on and those things. But I mean it when I say that I really do want to help people.
Nice.
This is fascinating because you found a way to do pastor outside of the traditional church.
Yeah
absolutely.
You found your own venue
that I'm
for
on
it.
A mission field.
Yeah.
So every morning, and it's not mandatory, obviously, but every morning, a half hour before the actual, so if the call's at 8 a.m. at 7:30, we do devotion. So I have my boombox on with, I'll put on some, I like more contemporary Christian music. Sometimes I'll put some hymns on, but we'll do music for 10 minutes. And then I'll do like a 10-minute message that encourages. It'll either be about my past or what's going on or whatever. I'll have someone on Zoom or FaceTime come on and talk. And then we just do 10 minutes of, I hate this term, but it's wins. What's going on in your life that you're proud of and stuff like that. And I've had a lot of actors and crew people tell me that my film set, my favorite one, was this felt like a warm bubble bath the entire time. And that's what we want to do. We want to make actors and crew feel like it's a set that they are not used to, because the leaders on the set, myself and the other people that I hire as department heads, love the Lord.
And that was Sorbo again, who likes bubble baths, or
absolutely. No. Well, we bubble bath together, so I wouldn't take him at his word. So
okay, I got to be careful. He might hear this.
I'm going to send it to him. And then,
okay.
Yeah, Ricky, I regularly have to filter what Brian does on the show.
I'm sure.
Okay, no, love you, Kevin. I love Hercules. It was that was appointment TV for me. Now we have we're up on another break here. When we come back, what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, instead of talking about what you've done, of course we'll promote it still and we'll get it in there. I'd like to, talk about what some of your favorite movies are, and
what influences.
Yeah, what made you actually want to be a filmmaker? We're talking to Ricky Borba, movie director, author of the book Trusting God, Pursuing Your Dreams, and Never Ever Giving Up on Yourself. Get it on Amazon, and we'll be back after this. Welcome back. It's the Drake and Scott Show with Ziggy and Coach. Coach is not here today, but we are on Radioslot.com. And back with our guest, Ricky Borba, filmmaker and author, old friend of mine. I guess I can call him an old friend, right? It's been...
Yeah, we're old.
We're just old, yeah. So, what do you remember from those days in acting class? Anything specific that's...
Well, I have footage, so this one is seared into my mind. There was one of the days we were in there, we got to be newscasters for Ohlone College TV, and so they chose two of us at a time to go up and sit at the desk and read the prompter.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the guy's name, but I was reading as a newscaster next, so we'll just call him, James. And James was reading, and he was having a very hard time with the teleprompter. And during his audition... The cuss word of all cuss words, like five or six times in a row. He was getting so angry, the teleprompter just kept cussing and cussing and cussing. And then they cut back to me. And I'm like, okay, everybody, that's a break. We'll come back and we'll, tell you about like the Stevenson Boulevard overpass. And then the music starts. And then you come on to frame, Brian, with your hands in your jean pockets, and you bow down as you start guttural laughing. And you can hear the start of your laugh before they fade out the audio from the floor. And so that's in my I if this was visual, I had the clip cued, but that I remember that vividly.
See, I don't remember that at all. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I do remember that exercise, and what was the our teacher's name is Tom Blank.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, he was not happy. I remember him not being happy with
that. Yeah, no, he was not. Yeah, because that was very unprofessional of James.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. No,
well, Brian's
I remember
no, laugh there was, is iconic.
Yes. It, no, there was, I remember we each had to direct a scene of some kind, and I did some.
Oh yeah, that too. I remember that. Yeah.
I remember doing, it was a young lady with a trench coat and a knife, and then you.
And yeah. Then, I also have that. So at the end, they said if you brought a VHS tape to class every day, they would put that on tape. So I did.
Oh,
and I have all of those. I have them all.
Yeah. And then she was supposed to stab you. Yeah. You were supposed to strangle her as you were dying. I mean, this is just, you were supposed to strangle her as you were dying. And then for some reason you were being cheeky where you're both laying on the ground and you reached out and started tugging on her coat or something like that. And I was like, no, you're supposed to, I freaked out. I was like, you're supposed to be dead.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, okay.
That sounds like me. That does sound like me.
Yeah.
fun times.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It was fun. I'm debating whether or not I should talk about the Mormon girl or not.
That'd be a no.
Okay.
I have to ask, Brian.
No. Nothing happened. It was just, you know, I was there to meet girls, and one of the girls I met was very nice, but it turned out she was a Mormon, so it was like, yeah, we're not going to do anything with this.
Meanwhile, she's going to heaven and you're not, so that's how that
happens. That's the Brian?
I don't know. But
that's the rumor, yeah. All right, so influences. I wonder if I can show your background here to the guys at least. You've got a giant Boba Fett behind you, and what looks like a bunch of other Star Wars paraphernalia.
Nice.
So I assume you're
my home office that I've worked pretty hard to.
Oh, that's dude. That's Han Solo cryogenically frozen.
Hold on. We switched to a picture of you. There we go.
Yeah, sometimes the camera gets wonky, but anyways, I have some life size stuff, and I wear the Mando costume for Halloween, and I've got Grogu over there. You can barely see him. My helmets and everything like that. But this is my little.
You need some more helmets.
Home. So.
So I take it you don't like Star Wars at all, then.
I hate it. Yeah. Well, I hate the new Star Wars. I hate Disney Star Wars.
Well, yeah. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah. Right. But the influences of George Lucas as a young guy, being enamored with Star Wars. As you get older, Christopher Nolan. I think the guy. I didn't really like Oppenheimer, to be honest with you, but the guy doesn't miss it. But still, you can't say it's a bad movie. I just didn't really like it. Wes Anderson. One of my favorite movies is Rushmore with Bill Murray, and I just think he's brilliant and funny. And you just as you. Watch more movies, you recognize visual styles and acting styles and things like that. I'm just really entranced with storytelling as a whole. So yeah, those directors mean a lot to me, and I've studied their work.
But what was the movie that was like that made it click with you? Like, this is what I want to do. Was it one movie in particular?
It had to be Star Wars. I mean, really. Okay. I mean, not that I've done a Star Wars yet or anything on that level, but knowing that it was possible to tell, like I personally believe. Darth Vader rescuing Luke and throwing the Emperor down the shaft is one of the single greatest cinematic moments in history because a father is choosing his son and he's redeemed. It's Star Wars and it's sci-fi and all that, whatever. But I remember that moment when I was 6 years old watching that movie thinking, I remember thinking, wow, that's powerful. And if it's possible to have that emotion when you watch a movie, I wanted to be a part of being an emotional storyteller. And so that for me, Return of the Jedi is my favorite Star Wars movie and one of my favorite movies of all time.
Ah, okay. Well, it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah. And the theological analogies with that are off the chain too.
Oh, I mean, for sure. So and George knew that obviously when he was writing. I mean that, you know, there's no denying that.
Oh, it's all throughout his movies. So yeah. I'm curious, the original Star Wars release. I mean, where's that part of your experience, or you had to see it later? I mean, did you see it in theaters?
I was born in December of 77. Star Wars came out in May of 77. Yeah. My first memory as a human being, though, is my mother cooking spaghetti. I was 3, and she put Star Wars on a VHS tape and plopped me down in front of the TV. And what I remember is the trench run, Luke in the X-Wing fighter going into the trench of the Death Star. That's my first ever memory as a human. And then my first memory of going to the movies was when I was 6 to watch Return of the Jedi. So it's in my DNA. I can't get away from it.
Oh, so it's all mom's fault, huh?
That's a great mom.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, thank you. If I got into my story, my mom's responsible for a lot of that too. But
cool.
Yeah, I'm just curious because I was opening weekend at Star Wars in 77 in a theater, and the place was empty. Everybody thought it was going to be a flop. It was this joke of a sci-fi, low-budget Sunday afternoon movie.
Yeah.
And then watching it take off like that. My parents liked it so much that we stayed in the theater and then sat and just watched it a second time through because they were so blown away.
I love that. How old were you at the time, roughly?
7, 8.
Okay, awesome. So, love it.
Yeah, you think you're old.
No, Brian's old. Brian's old.
Yeah, but I like that. That's an influence for you because part of what George Lucas did was he went outside the box and attempted things that no one had ever done before.
Absolutely.
And said,
yeah.
I don't care if you say I can't do it. Watch me.
Yeah.
And then he just took off, and he's maybe the single most dominant force in movie history.
Mm-hmm.
I would say. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah. No, I saw it in theaters too. I think it was the 78 or 79 re-release. And I just, you know, speaking of mothers again, I, you know, during the Death Star fight when everybody, when they're trying to escape and the stormtroopers would come on the scene, I would make the gun shape with my hand and hold it up and I was helping, you know.
Yeah.
And my mother had to keep putting, you know, move my arm down because I was disturbing the people behind me, and it was, you know.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, even today, there's so many quotes from the Star Wars series that mm-hmm. everybody knows.
Yeah.
Everybody knows.
Yeah. And Ricky, you got cut off there. You made a snide remark.
I said it's very on brand for you.
Oh, okay.
Annoying people. Like, saying overly big gestures.
Okay. So now, what's your opinion of some of the classic movies that people like? Because I know not everybody does. Not everybody loves Citizen Kane. What do you think of some of the movies that everybody holds in high regard? Which ones do you agree with, and which ones do you think don't make the cut?
I do happen to think Citizen Kane and It's a Wonderful Life are incredible films. I think Citizen Kane, there's people on Earth that say that's the greatest film of all time. I don't think that it's the greatest film of all time. I think that era of filmmaking is special. You know, things were more, dare I say, patriotic and obviously less woke and things like that, but more heartfelt and story driven, less visuals and things like that. And so I feel like that's gone. I don't know if we'll ever have that again. I do find myself more than movies, though. Television from the 50s and 60s, I think, is just the true gold in that era. Like, The Twilight Zone is my favorite show of all time. I've probably seen every episode 3 or 4 times. Obviously, The Outer Limits is okay, too. But then you go into The Brady Bunch, and you have iconic shows like that at the time. There's something special about that era. Leave It to Beaver as well, where you are trying to not just be clever in telling stories, but you're also trying to have a lesson. And I think too many forms of media now are just more about, hey, look at how awesome I am. They've lost that spark of wanting to make your fellow man better.
Yeah, we seem to have defaulted into cheap tricks and shock value and cute one-liners. Yeah. I mean, it's like lowest common denominator of entertainment.
Absolutely.
And where do you find stuff that's actually that has depth? That seems like hard.
You have to
find.
Watch everything, because I don't think it's a fair statement to say, oh, just go put on Pure Flix or go put on like Salem Broadcast. Faith-based films are not art. They are, in my opinion, most of the time they are blunt force trauma. There's nothing like I like this analogy. If you go to the Louvre and you see the Mona Lisa, you leave wondering what was she smiling about? What was the artist thinking when he painted her? When you leave a faith-based film, you're like, okay, I get it. Wow, I'm a horrible person. I need Jesus to make my marriage better. And this Bible verse, it's not art. And so I think you have to watch everything. And like we were talking about earlier, like even within Star Wars, you have these biblical elements. And then you look at a film like The Matrix, where his name is Neo. Well, what's Neo an anagram of? One, the one. He is Jesus Christ coming back to life. There's a lot of films that if you look for him nowadays, you'll find those things, but it's not one specific genre or filmmaker or even a company like Lionsgate who does do a lot of faith-based stuff. You really have to watch a lot of stuff to find it nowadays.
Now,
yeah, absolutely.
What about when you talk about messages in movies, you know, a lot of the message lately has just been woke stuff, you know, DEI. Yeah. We got to load up with the brown people and the women, and white people need not apply. And so they're very heavy on the message and very light on everything else. It's like they forgot how to tell a story in the process of checking off a bunch of boxes. Are we ever going to get away from that?
Well, I think the date right now today that we're having this conversation, I think I feel a shift with what happened in the election with the silent majority, as we've been calling ourselves, rising up and saying, we're tired of it. We're tired of that. We're going to make him the popular vote winner. We're going to make him the, you know, electoral winner. And whether you agree with Trump or not, the fact of the matter is he does want to make America great, and he does bring more conservative values into office than the other candidate did. And so I feel like there's a shift that's happened. And I do feel like, for example, this weekend, Disney started saying, okay, we're going to advertise on X again. We're going to, you know, a lot of people pulled their advertising from Twitter when Elon got it. Right. And they're realizing, okay, well, then guess what? A majority of the country is conservative, and we're going to stop getting your product. They need us. And so I think the pendulum is going to swing back our way for a little bit, not permanently, but they're going to say, we need to make more traditional value stuff. We need to make more things that focus on story and less on, you know, everything you just mentioned, Brian. I don't think that stuff sells. It never has. But there was a very powerful, small group of people that said, we're going to keep pushing it.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think I've seen a movie in theaters since Endgame.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, because it's like, well, because I watch, you know, The Critical Drinker and Snarky J and other Nerdrotic on YouTube, and they highlight all of the issues with movies that have been coming out, and it's like, I don't want anything to do with that.
Except mine, Brian. You should watch mine.
Well, of course I watch yours. In fact, speaking of which, because we're almost out of time for this segment, we want to know where we can watch your movies. Can you get them on streaming or what?
Hope for the Holidays, My Brother's Crossing, and Christmas at Keystone are all on Amazon, I believe. My Brother's Crossing is not on Amazon. It is on, gosh, you're going to have to look it up. I don't, it either got off of PureFlix or just went back onto it, or it's on Freevee and went to Pure. I don't remember, but My Brother's Crossing, you might have to dig for. Look, at My Brother's Crossing is a good film. It's just really heavy-handed, faith-based. I was not involved in editing. I was not involved in post-production. And some of the things that I was talking about on set did not get listened to when they hired the editor. And so it's a very overtly faith-based film. But I will say this, because I know we're out of time on this segment. They have shown that film probably 300 or 400 times since it came out in 2020, because it's a true story. And the guy that it happened to, that's his ministry. He's gone all over the world, and he keeps a little notebook in his pocket of people who have accepted the Lord after the movie's over, and it's over 200 people. So what do I care about how I feel about that movie and its overhandedness when 200 people come to the Lord after watching it?
Oh, my. Okay.
Well, I mean, it brings back to light what you were mentioning earlier. You know, how do we rate and evaluate a film's value?
And,
you know, making money is only one thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, right, absolutely. Absolutely agree.
You can make a whole lot of money and depress people and, you know, and further the wrong cause.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
We're talking with Ricky Borba, filmmaker and author of the book Trusting God, Pursuing Your Dreams, and Never Ever Giving Up on Yourself. Find it on Amazon. We got one more segment after this, and we'll be right back. Drake and Scott with Ziggy and Coach, who is absent today, Radioslot.com. We're doing an interview with filmmaker and author Ricky Borba. This is our last segment. We got 5 minutes, basically.
5 minutes.
So it's, you know,
well, it's interesting.
Final thoughts and things like that.
Yeah, Ricky, you were just talking about Disney making adjustments and such. And so I was looking up on the NASDAQ while you were talking about it. Their stock has gone up almost $20 a share since Election Day.
See, that's what happens. I mean, conservative people do have a voice, and I'm glad we're using it.
I don't know, though. I mean, after all of the garbage that Disney's been putting, not just Disney, but Hollywood's been putting out, and a lot of the insults actors have given to, you know, the conservative audience, I don't know if I'm ready to go back to the theaters if they suddenly shift back.
They got a clear message, and we're talking to somebody today who I do want to go to the theaters and see their stuff. Mm-hmm. Hollywood got a message, and they're starting to figure it out, and the loud mouths are having to back down, and some of the other people are, they're going to rise to the occasion.
No, that's true. Rachel Ziegler, who's what is the deal with that Snow White movie? It's like they've been talking about it for two or three years now. No, Snow White, literally the remake of Snow White.
Oh.
Snow White and the Seven Ghetto
Dwarfs. I've never seen more bad press for a film than that film. I don't even understand how they're going to release it. It's on pace to make like $8. I don't get it.
Yeah. So anyway, so she said some things and then had to apologize, and you know, I let emotions get away from me.
You know, there's that Bible verse that talks about it doesn't matter. I think I'm paraphrasing, but it's, you know, it doesn't matter who's speaking it. As long as the gospel is preached, it's fine. That's how I feel about movies. I don't care if Disney now makes a bunch of family friendly films that are, you know, kind of with more conservative values. I will go see them because media is one way that people are influenced. There's seven pillars of influence. That's one of them. And so if Disney and all these other companies are going to toe the line for 6 or 7 more years, I'm for it. And then when they stop, we can stop spending money on them again. But let's bring our friends back to the movie theaters for the films that are worth it.
All right.
Yeah, that's a good message. I think what you might have been referencing is when disciples came to Jesus and said, hey, there's this guy, John the Baptist, and his disciples, they're not doing the same things we're doing. And Jesus kind of scolded him, said, hey, look, if they're not against us, then they're for us. Come on.
Yep, like, absolutely.
Get with
the
program.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting how the conservative right, especially the Christians, how they respond to the other side and if they can be gracious as the shift goes. That's what I'm curious to watch.
Yeah. I mean, there are always going to be some Christians who are once burned, always burned, and, you know, perpetually offended and all those things. But the Bible calls us to forgive 70 times seven. And if these companies are saying, hey, we blew it, we're sorry. Okay, great. I will give them another chance. I will personally give them my $15 again to see what happens.
It's kind of weird to talk to a filmmaker who actually knows some Bible.
It's pretty cool.
This is so out of the ordinary for me. I love it.
Thank you.
Props to you and blessings.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
So, Ricky, plug your book one more time.
Okay, yeah. So it's on Amazon. It's on a bunch of places. But if you Google my name, Ricky Borba, and then what I like for the rest of my life, if you Google my name, Ricky Borba, then the phrase trusting God, you will find my book. And so, like I said, it's a very easy read. It's got a little stick figure animation on the bottom right. When you flip the pages through, he's running over obstacles and under flaming arrows and stuff. I mean, it's just really a fun book. It's about 180 something pages. And if you need an encouragement, read it and call me or text me when you get to page, I think it's 87, when my phone number's on there.
And he spelled all the words right.
Because I had an editor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you got to make sure you put in the Ricky Borba part because
B-O-R-B-A.
With like several other books with that title by different authors. Max,
right.
And people are going to end up on Max Lucado on accident, and that's not what we're talking about.
Nobody should be reading Max Lucado.
Yeah. Well, I just typed in Trusting God, Ricky Borba, and it's the number two option.
Perfect.
That comes up.
Nice.
Oh, buy 10 copies. I'll get $8.
Yeah, gosh. That's
Brian, you know how that works.
That's the next rant. Yeah, I know.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm corrected. It's the first two.
It should be the first.
Yeah, it's the first
one. By the way, I lied. It's page 60. My email address and phone number on page 60.
You get any cranks?
Oh, there's always trolls.
Not yet? Okay. Uh-oh. I would have figured you'd have got nothing but cranks because that's I'm going to harass this guy. You know, that's
well, we could be the first. I mean, kind of fun. See if he can figure it out. It's just us messing with him, or if it was a real hater.
You know, I can send him I can do the Trump AI thing and send him a message that way.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to send him a message, and it's going to be I'd rather kiss a Wookiee. See if he gets it.
Okay. Well, Ricky, that is, I'm afraid we are out of time, but thank you so much for joining us and talking about your life and your work. And look for him on Amazon, look for his movies, and anything, you know, when you, when the new stuff starts coming out, let me know, and we'll give it a plug.
We'd love to promote your stuff.
Always love talking to Brian Yvankovich. It's always a good time.
Bam.
Yeah, you know. It's not a secret. I don't know why everybody thinks it's a secret. Okay.
It's fun, though.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Drake and Scott with Ziggy and Coach. We will catch you again next week. All right, Mary, throw your hat in the air.
Meow.